everyone. Sorry to interrupt your lunch. I'm just going to start the event. I'm Nan Hien, a correspondent governor of the club. Before I begin, just a few things. Can everyone turn their phone off or switch to silent mode? And also, we have quite a few talks this week. Tomorrow lunch, we have Douglas Clark to talk about gunboat justice. And the day after that, we also have a panel of Chinese academics to talk about the Chinese economy and what medicine is needed. Now, the debate on whether Hong Kong's currency should stay pegged to the greenback has been going on for years, decades even, but calls to scrap this link has intensified recently. Among the many problems this currency arrangement has been causing to the property market, to inflation in the city, the latest issue stems from the recent devaluation of the yuan. The move has led to strong money inflow from China to Hong Kong, with many people buying up Hong Kong dollars. Various media reports reported last week that the Hong Kong Monetary Authority had to intervene 13 times in September, or a total of 75.8 Hong Kong billion dollars, so the local dollar wouldn't rise too much. So far, the authority spent about $148 billion this year to defend the peg, yet another indicator of how costly this currency arrangement is. Today, Duncan Enos Kerr, a regional director of Asia for Asia at The Economist Intelligence Unit, will discuss whether it's time for Hong Kong to lose the peg. Enos Kerr, who's been with the EIU since 2005, is responsible for compiling economic and political forecasts for a number of countries, including China and Hong Kong. So everyone, give a warm welcome to Duncan. Let's hear what he has to say.
Thank you very much. And thank you to the FCC for putting us all up today. And hopefully, I'll try and keep things quite brief so that people can have some questions and interaction afterwards. This is a very important topic for Hong Kong, obviously, but it's also quite an intimidating one for someone to raise in this sort of discussion, mostly because the peg has lasted for so long that it has its own credibility from that history. It was, of course, introduced in 1983, and it's endured through regional crises, notably the 97 Asia financial crisis and the attacks on the peg during that period. It's endured through crises in the US, which I think is equally important because obviously when you see financial crises like the savings and loan crisis, or the subprime crisis in the US, that moves US interest rates around in a way that's very straining for Hong Kong. But we've seen it survive through that, and we've seen it survive through the global financial crisis, through all of the strains that these create. So for someone to suggest that we need to be thinking about perhaps moving away is a bit perhaps quixotic. And I think it's worth remembering when we talk about this exactly why it's been able to survive. And there are sort of some clear advantages that come from the peg. For a small, open trading economy like Hong Kong, where both exports and imports are more than twice as large as its total GDP, the peg provides a degree of financial solidity and resilience. It's a monetary anchor that allows the territory to sort of see its way through these global shocks that might otherwise be very damaging for a trade-dependent economy. It's also brought some advantages in terms of Hong Kong's role as a financial center. The US dollar, of course, very important for international financial transactions. And for Hong Kong to be able to compete with a currency that's pegged to the dollar has been very important for that aspect of the economy. And also, you know, these advantages might apply in any other territory. But for Hong Kong, it also has perhaps the sort of some of the most favorable basic sort of fundamentals that enable the peg to function quite well. Those include the massive reserves that the government has, more than enough to cover the monetary base. It has a very flexible system in terms of its pricing, both of things like property, wages, and general costs. Those have moved up and down in Hong Kong in a way that would be quite unthinkable for a lot of certainly West European countries. But the PEG has also had a very sound degree of credible policy support. The government has been very clear in its support of the currency. Certainly in 1997, 1998, was perhaps the toughest test, but in other circumstances, all politicians are being constantly reiterating their backing for it, and that history, coupled with also the fiscal strength of Hong Kong, really gives that sort of degree of credibility to the policy that makes it quite intimidating to attack. With all that in mind, I want to say, first of all, that what I'm discussing today is not an attack on the concept of the currency peg in itself. I think actually in Hong Kong's particular case, given those advantages and the role that the peg plays, a peg is actually not a bad policy, and it has been quite appropriate. But what I would think is important to talk about is whether it is appropriate to peg to the US dollar, or whether we need to start thinking about time to move on from that, to look to the future, and perhaps think about pegging instead to the renminbi with a vision for the long-term future in which Hong Kong will almost certainly have to adopt the Chinese currency as a part of China. And I think when we think about that particular question, there are a number of things that have changed in recent years that are very important for the debate. And there's three in particular that I wanted to talk about today, and I'll keep it quite short and punchy given the time constraint. But these three issues, I think, make it a very good time to start talking about it, if not to actually do it right on this particular instance. So what are these three things? Well, I think the first thing that's been very obvious is that the rise of China has meant that for Hong Kong, increasingly, it is developments in mainland China that affect the local economy rather than changes in the US. I think we can see that from virtually any sort of statistic that you look at. In terms of the share of merchandise trade, China now accounts for over 50% of Hong Kong's merchandise trade, compared with about 7% for that for the US. That is, it's quite a significant sort of change, but it is also one that has been quite long-lasting. If we were to look a decade ago, China would still account for over 40% of trade. So perhaps not a dramatic change, but certainly we are still moving towards growing reliance with China on that side of things. In terms of other aspects of the economy, China is, of course, very important for the tourism sector. 78% of tourists come from China. A lot of those are those day traders, but even if you're looking at the overnight visitors, who probably reflect the more sort of underlying bulk of the demand, certainly in terms of the spending, those are 69% coming from mainland China. So I think we can see that certainly for the tourism sector, mainland China is the overwhelming driver there. We've also seen, and this is a big change in recent years, China becoming much more influential in terms of local asset markets. The numbers on this side are quite difficult to quantify. Chinese money often flows in from a number of different sources and is not always clearly labeled as such. But I think we can see from the anecdotal information that certainly mainland Chinese money is now probably one of the key drivers at the margin of what's going on in the territories. Property market, Chinese money also very important in terms of driving what the equity markets are doing. So I think that is something new, certainly over the last 10 years and probably even shorter term. Also, of course, when we're looking at Hong Kong's markets, in terms of the equity market, 60% last year of the capitalization of the local market was mainland Chinese firms. Even more in terms of what the equity market turnover is. Last year, that was about 71% of equity market turnover was mainland listed firms. So when we think about these companies listed in Hong Kong, it's worth bearing in mind that actually the US dollar peg introduces an extra level of complexity because most of these firms have their revenue in renminbi, but they're listed in a currency that's linked to the US dollar, so you're actually playing with exchange rate risk in those prices as well. All of these tend to suggest that Hong Kong's economy is increasingly closely linked to the mainland's economic cycle, certainly more so than those in the US these days. And that matters because if Hong Kong is importing US monetary policy that is being driven by economic developments in mainland China, you're going to actually be introducing strains and stresses via the peg rather than reducing them. I should say, of course, that not everyone actually agrees with me on this particular topic. The IMF, for example, put out a study in April that suggested that even now Hong Kong's economy is more closely linked to the US in terms of its economic cycles. They point to things like the level of value added in terms of trade still being higher in terms of Hong Kong's trade with the US than it is with mainland China. I've seen these arguments cited by the Hong Kong Monetary Authority and by government officials. I would say, though, that I personally feel that while you can play with the numbers like that, it doesn't stand the test of sense, common sense, to me. If you were to think about, say, a 2% slowdown in the US versus a 2% slowdown in China, I think we would probably much prefer a slowdown in the US than in China from Hong Kong's perspective, if only for the wash that we would feel in confidence here. So I think to my mind, the argument that Hong Kong's economy is closely linked with China is pretty clear. What else is changing? I think something that is changing very rapidly and has done much faster than anybody had been forecasting is the speed of use of the renminbi in the global economy. Now, the renminbi is not going to be what I would call a global currency anytime soon, despite the fact that it is now, I believe, the fourth most used in terms of international transactions. There are still a number of constraints there, but we can see in Hong Kong, renminbi usage is becoming increasingly normal. We have roughly 1 trillion renminbi in deposits here, about 11% of the deposit base, give or take, at the end of last year. That's still significantly less than the US dollar, but when we consider that the US dollar is kind of, you know, parity to the Hong Kong dollar, it's still a very high percentage for the renminbi. We're also seeing renminbi financial products increasingly used in Hong Kong and traded in Hong Kong. And I think it's illustrative that if you're looking at the clearing house, the clearing transactions, the level of renminbi transactions cleared in Hong Kong is roughly 5 times the level of US dollar transactions cleared in Hong Kong. If you're looking at certain securities markets beyond the equity market, it's true that the US dollar still dominates in interest rate swaps, which are the largest part of the market, but you are seeing renminbi dominating in non-deliverable forwards, and I think it's gaining market share in a lot of these other areas as the currency becomes more used internationally. So that's the second thing, the renminbi becoming more widely used. And finally, there is, of course, the politics, which is perhaps the most important of the things that's changing. Relations between Hong Kong and the central government have become increasingly complicated over the last few years. And I think against the background of sort of the rise of nativism and the sense, I think, within China that Hong Kong is beginning to strain against the relationship with the mainland, that is something that the mainland Chinese government cannot allow to continue and really must look to reinforce its sovereignty in Hong Kong. Against that sort of background, having the currency linked to a foreign government, indeed the US, is particularly sensitive, looks increasingly odd for many Chinese politicians, I would suggest. So if one was going to sort of say that these three things are changing, you know, the next question is really sort of, what happens next? Is it actually time to move on to a peg from the US dollar to the renminbi? I think I would sort of hesitate to advocate for that at the moment, and that's not just because of the continuing constraints that there are on capital transactions and so on. it is true that there is a degree of constraint still on China's capital transactions, and that is problematic when you're looking at potentially pegging to the renminbi. But in practice, capital account liberalization in China is progressing. It moved much faster than people had thought over the past 5 years. Even despite the recent troubles in financial markets in China, it is still continuing to advance. We've just seen, for example, some liberalization of foreign access to Chinese debt markets and so on. And certainly if the Chinese government wanted to actually move towards a peg with the renminbi, it could facilitate that by opening markets to the HKMA, for example, in a way that would allow the exchange fund to invest enough to cover the monetary base and so on. But I think that we still really need to wait for China to make the declaration that its capital account is fully open. If we look at the PBC, the People's Bank, it is virtually on the verge of doing so. We were talking to the People's Bank just last week, and there is a sense that this is a gradual process. It's got to move slowly. They're a bit nervous about, you know, the potential repercussions from capital account liberalization. But the sorts of things that they list as being the qualifications as for when they will declare, you know, full opening, they're not terribly difficult to achieve. And certainly, I think that if we're looking 2 years down the line, it's very possible to envisage China officially declaring its account open. With that sort of in mind, I think the debate in Hong Kong really needs to start now about the politics of how the move might occur, what the move might, what shape the move might take, the move to potentially a basket beforehand, which personally I feel would be complicated and untransparent, or whether they should just move directly to a peg with the renminbi. To my mind, that second option is much simpler and easier to implement and administrate. But I think when it comes down to it, the final decision will be a matter of politics. The timing, probably not right yet, but it is coming a lot faster than people think. So if Hong Kong and Beijing want to avoid the sort of political repercussions in Hong Kong that might happen, it's not a move that's likely to be terribly popular locally, so you're going to need to bring people on side. And as a result, I think the government really needs to start talking to people now about what's going to happen, despite the fact that inevitably discussion of that will increase pressure on the peg in the short term. There are ways of managing that. I think that is it's something that will be difficult, but very, very achievable. And certainly when you consider the potential repercussions if they don't go through the sort of consultation now, if they try and get forced into it, I think that would be a lot more problematic for the government. So I'm going to wrap up there, if that's okay. It's very short, but I think we can probably discuss in a lot more detail in just a second.
Thank you, Duncan. I'm going to open it up to the floor. Does anybody have questions? Please identify yourself and also the company that you're with. Does anyone have questions?
Thank you. Carl Hurst, HG Capital Management. Interesting address, Duncan. You've obviously set the stage for lots of questions, and I hope you do get them. If we were to adopt a link with the RMB, that would envisage quite a sharp revaluation, an upward revaluation for the Hong Kong dollar. And I think probably people in Hong Kong might welcome that more than not welcome it. But I just wondered, going forward, there's nothing magical about 7.8 against the dollar. You've mentioned it's quite right. It's been that way for 32 years. We already have a band in which the dollar, Hong Kong dollar can move. Perhaps a tweak the 7.8 to 7.257 might be the way to go forward in terms of setting the stage for a possible revaluation against the renminbi. And I think the Hong Kong people might be adverse against a link with the renminbi because a link with the renminbi means we are dealing in renminbi, not Hong Kong dollars. And I appreciate your views on both, please.
Well, I would say, first of all, that you know, essentially, if you're talking about a change, then everything is up for discussion. I think you raised two sort of separate issues there, and I'll come to the second one first, if I might. The issue of sort of changing the peg at which the dollar is currently against the US dollar. When you think about an exchange rate, fundamentally it's the cost of goods and services in an economy. And in Hong Kong, you have very flexible pricing. Prices for property, wages, have both over the history of the peg shown that they can move really quite dramatically. I mean, if we think all the way back, you know, we're complaining about high property prices at the moment, but if we think back sort of 10 years ago, there'd been a 60% plus decline in property prices in Hong Kong, phenomenally large in response to the impact of the Asia crisis. So I think in practice, sort of, we see ongoing revaluations within the economy all the time. So the necessity of moving the actual exchange rate around is perhaps less direct than you know might at first seem apparent. And I think one of the factors behind sort of very high prices in the territory at the moment is it's certainly a combination of the cheap money coming in from the US, but it's also the strength of Hong Kong's own economy, which is, you know, it's perhaps struggling a little bit this year, but up until this year it was doing very well. So high prices are also a reflection of that, and certain specific issues in the property sector as well. But when we come back to the idea of that first issue that you may have raised of whether you would need to sort of appreciate as part of a revaluation. I think I've heard that mentioned a number of times, but there's no reason why that necessarily needs to be the case. If you're switching from a US dollar peg to a renminbi peg, you can just simply, you know, choose the exchange rate on a given day and swap whatever the US dollar exchange rate is for the renminbi exchange rate on that particular day. There are a number of reasons why people can be quite concerned about that. The US is a developed economy, in many ways quite similar to Hong Kong. China is still an emerging economy. You can expect the productivity growth in China will be, generally speaking, stronger than in Hong Kong. And as a result, you will see sort of over the relatively long term, the renminbi appreciating, which would put pressure in Hong Kong. But when you're looking at that sort of long time scale, I think the important thing is to preserve the flexibility of local pricing and local wage levels so that it can respond to those pressures that would come through a peg with the renminbi, rather than sort of to focus on necessarily adjusting any peg at any given level. I think actually adopting the renminbi would be a interesting sort of question over whether that would be different. But I think in practice, actually, the flexibility that there is in the local economy means that you can make those sort of competitive adjustments, certainly over time.
Any more questions?
Yes, George Long from Lim Advisors. Have you looked at the mechanisms of any kind of change? So under the basic law, what's allowed? I guess really the practical question is, can the Hong Kong government decide on their own? I mean, obviously it's inconceivable to me they would do that without consulting the People's Bank of China and the Ministry of Finance in China. But have you looked at that decision-making process and how they would deal with the different constituents in that decision?
Yeah, I mean, from that perspective, it's one of the reasons why I think a peg to the renminbi is much more likely than adoption of the renminbi, because the Hong Kong dollar is very explicitly mentioned in the basic law. The peg to the US dollar is not, incidentally. So it would be quite possible to switch the peg or adjust the peg within the context of the basic law, as I read it. I'm not a constitutional lawyer, so I may be wrong on that, but my personal reading is that that flexibility exists there. In terms of where the authority to do so would lie, absolutely, it would be with the People's Bank. I think that the impetus for any decision would come from the center rather than from Hong Kong. I personally can't see the Hong Kong government being terribly keen to push this forward, partly because of the strains that it knows would come out on the ground. I think you would be seeing the pressure coming from the centre rather than from Hong Kong.
Gentlemen there.
John Browning, Barnes Financial. Can I just ask a question? I'm a bit lost, because if Hong Kong was to adopt renminbi peg, surely it has to adopt the forward interest rate curve of China at the same time. So interest rates would go from very small here in Hong Kong to 5% overnight.
That certainly would be something that would be, needed to consider in the process. And I think, in terms of the actual technicalities of the transition, that would certainly be one of the more complicated aspects of it.
Well, I would disagree with the people who've said that the renminbi would be a welcome by the man in the street. It would be a disaster for many household owners. Complete disaster.
For owners, yes, but Hong Kong is also a very high saving economy. So, people who have savings would also welcome that side of things. I think that there is a question over whether, we're talking 2 years down the line, whether or not interest rates in China would be at the same level in that stage is another question. You might also be needing, in that sort of context, to look at where the Hong Kong economy was at the time. We've been in a period of very, very low interest rates for a very long time. The US is about to raise interest rates. It's quite possible that in 2.5 years' time, say, US interest rates could be at 4%. That's not an outrageous suggestion, although one hopes not. And at that sort of stage, the differential might be much narrower and would probably facilitate any transition. So it's always very difficult to make these sorts of predictions without actually knowing what things are like in the future. Certainly if the transition occurred right now at this moment, that would be a huge problem. And I think it's also a reason to suggest that it's probably not a good time for it now.
Any more questions?
Bill Agee, associate member. You talk about moving from the current linked exchange rate system to another one, but you didn't talk about just letting a free float. Is that out of the question, and would it appreciate or depreciate?
And for us in The Economist, who are kind of, generally speaking, very pro sort of market liberalization, you would have thought the free float was had a lot in its favor. The nature of the free float, or the reason why free floats are not usually adopted by small economies with large amounts of trade, is that essentially it introduces a further level of volatility into any economy. When you have, exports and imports are both more than 200% of GDP. And imagine a scenario in which it was something like the global financial crisis and the trade sector was very badly hit. The currency would be plummeting, inflation would be surging. This is exactly why the peg is adopted, to kind of prevent that type of shock hitting the local economy and making it worse. Because in practice, you don't, the depreciation that you would see in that sort of context, in other countries it kind of helps offset the imbalance on the external sector because the exporters gain competitiveness. But in places like Hong Kong and Singapore, where a lot of the trade is through trade, in practice it doesn't really affect the competitiveness that much. It merely adds to the chaos and the volatility. So I think in these types of locations, there's quite strong arguments for pegging to a larger economy that kind of gives it a bit of an anchor.
Any more questions? Oh.
Hi, this is Kit from MHP Communications. I just want to know, as you have mentioned, China is an emerging economy. So what do you think about pegging Hong Kong dollars with a basket of currencies instead of just one currency, that is renminbi? Maybe like a mix of US dollars and renminbi. What do you think about it? Thank you.
There are arguments in its favor. It allows a period of transition for people to kind of get sort of comfortable with the idea of moving towards a renminbi. There are two problems with the basket. First of all is that if people kind of know that the end goal is eventually going to be a link up with the renminbi or adoption of the renminbi, then you are inviting people to speculate continuously over when that will occur. And so you would see any basket constantly subjugated to attacks by the market. In addition, the problem with baskets is that they tend to be less transparent in terms of what's in the basket. Singapore, for example, doesn't publicize what it actually includes in terms of its balance within the basket of its currencies. The other aspect is that baskets are not very easy to explain to people. And one of the big advantages of the peg to the US dollar, for example, is that if you're the Hong Kong government and you're talking to the man on the street, it's very easy to describe the currency arrangement. And that's perhaps an advantage that shouldn't be understated. So I think there are some advantages to a potential basket, but there are also a lot of disadvantages. Ultimately, the decision would need to lie with the monetary authorities, but my personal sentiment would be if you're changing and you're going to lose that sort of strength of history that you have in the embodied in the peg at the moment, then you'd probably be better off just going straight to the system that everybody knows is going to be eventually occurring one way or another.
Just to pick up on that last point you made about everybody knowing this is probably the system that's going to end up one way or another. Could you comment on the benefits of that system as far as Hong Kong is concerned? I mean, what if we're going to peg to the RMB? How does that affect Hong Kong's position as an international finance center, as China's international finance center? In its position in the world, its position in the region, would it make Hong Kong continue to be relevant in that, or are we going to see a gradual emasculation of its relevance in that context?
I think that's a very good question, and it's a good question because I mean there are obvious sort of advantages that would come in terms of. It would be more closely linked with mainland financial markets, which would ease opening of access for Hong Kong sort of companies and transactions with the mainland. But I think the big question is, what would you lose in that sort of circumstance? Because you can kind of see the closer interaction with the mainland as kind of a given. I think the risk is that you lose a sense of uniqueness that exists in the territory at the moment. But most of these things I don't really see as being under threat while the one country, two systems setup is in place. The strength of the rule of law, the generally open international mindset, the sort of development that you've kind of seen, the infrastructure, the strengthening actually of the education system, I think in many aspects in recent years. I think all of these mean that Hong Kong is in a pretty good place. And if you look at the rest of China, one thing that is coming sort of quite clear from the Xi Jinping government's agenda is that certainly until 2020, you're not seeing a lot of progress on the more soft sides of things like legal reform, accountability, and these sorts of areas. And I think because these areas will remain underdeveloped, certainly for the next 5 years in China, it's very difficult to say much beyond you know, the 5 to 10 year time span, but certainly for the next 5 to 10 years, I think Hong Kong will remain very clearly the place where international companies wanting to do business with sort of China in the financial sense will prefer to be based, rather than Shanghai, where regulations remain difficult. I mean, anyone who's tried to deal with Chinese employment law or contract law knows that they'd much rather be based in Hong Kong. For all these types of reasons, I think you know, Hong Kong will remain an international financial sector, pegged to the dollar or pegged to the renminbi, either way.
Do we have any more questions? I guess I have a last one then. This debate's been going on forever, and we always hear the same thing from the financial secretary or government officials, that no, we're going to stick to the peg. It's probably going to be the same response in a couple of years. What do you think is going to take to finally bring about change? Because it could be another 10 years. It could be.
Well, this is why I was saying, I think when the People's Bank declares that China's capital account is fully open, capital account opening is a very grey area, and you can basically parse it how you like. But if China officially, as a government policy, has said our capital account is open, it's going to be very difficult for Hong Kong officials to be sitting there saying the capital account is not open for open enough for us to justify thinking about this. So I think that declaration, when it's made, will be very important for the discussion. And I think that really could be a catalyst for when we need to start thinking about things happening.
All right. Thank you, Duncan. That was a great discussion.